Welcome to Lit with Kelly and Jacqueline, the podcast. If you're one of the people who have stopped by our blog at litwithkellyandjacqueline.com, thanks for reading and for finding us here. If this is the first time you've heard of us, we're glad you found the podcast.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Jacqueline.
And we're back here in the book cave for episode
40.
40.
Woo! We made it.
We did. So we have our special guest that we always have with us on the...
On the zeros.
I was going to say on the decades, but it really hasn't been a decade.
Welcome back to Jen.
Hi.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for being here.
Oh, I'm so happy to be invited.
Well, we're glad you are because we're talking about a good one today.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Very much so.
So you'll recall maybe in February we chose for Women's History Month, which is being celebrated in March, we chose The Great Stewardess Rebellion by Nell McShane Wolfhart. This is the story, or the subtitle is How Women Launched a Workplace Revolution at 30,000 Feet. Kelly, do you think you can summarize this book like you do magically every other episode?
Well, let's see here. Well, I have to think about this one. So this is the story of the stewardess from about the change in stewardesship, whatever you want to call it, flight attendants now, right? And how they began in probably late 40s, early 50s-ish, up through 90s, even 2000s, I think it mentions in the, and it's their struggle to get equal rights and to be seen as a professional and the unions and all that kind of, so it's a...
All the steps they had to take to be treated fairly.
Right.
This was maddening.
It was so maddening.
Okay, but before we get into book spoilers, we invited Jen on the episode today, and then she did all the work.
And we do appreciate that.
And we do.
So much work.
Today we're drinking a cocktail called Blue Skies in reference to the subject of our book, and because we needed something light and refreshing today. Mm-hmm. So this is from a website called Mix That Drink, and it is 1 ounce of blue curacao, 1 ounce of Cointreau. Is that how you say it?
I think so.
It was Cointreau.
Is it?
I always say Cointreau, but I could be wrong.
That sounds fancier and more French. So 1 ounce of blue curacao, 1 ounce of Cointreau, and then you top it with, they say lemonade, but on the site, they're very specific that it's a British recipe, so it's really like fizzy lemon soda. So we're using Betty Buzz Meyer Lemon Club Soda today, and you mix it all together, pour it over ice, and it is a lovely shade of sky blue.
It really is.
And we're serving it icy cold, so cheers.
Cheers.
And I like it.
I do.
It was a good find, Jen.
Mm-hmm. Yay.
We should also mention that we have little airplane snacks.
Yeah. Telling you, we invite her in and she brings it all. We also have our tiny little packs of peanuts. So when you hear crunching in the background, it is airplane snacks. Yes. So, and we're not going to hold back because these look really good. These have peanut butter and chocolate. They're real fancy, but they look yummy.
Oh.
Thanks, Jen.
Mm-hmm. Anytime.
Thanks.
All right. Before we get into the book, Kelly, what have you been reading?
I'm reading The Burnout. No, Burnout? Burnt Out? Okay. By Sophie Kinsella.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Burnt Out. And I'm also reading the latest one by Claire Pooley. I can't remember the name.
Is that the same person who wrote...
We did a book by her.
Yeah.
Can't remember that name
either. It was the Kindness Project? The Happiness...
Yes. Something
what
like...
What was that called?
It was the project, right?
Yeah. One where people wrote in the notebook.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Jen, what are you reading right now?
I forgot to think about this, but the book I paused to finish, the one we're discussing today, is Clara and the Sun.
Oh, okay.
And he's a very famous British writer who's Japanese, and I forgot his name already.
We're so good on this today.
I feel terrible. I mean, it was a famous book from a couple of years ago. Can I be honest? The only reason I'm reading it is they're making a movie out of it, and I normally don't care, but my crush, Cillian Murphy's son, is in it.
Oh.
his son, Aaron Murphy's in it. And so I was like, well, I got to
read it. You're going to watch it.
I'm having I watched an Irish movie last night. I had Irish coffee this morning. So mostly I've been reading a lot of Irish authors.
Okay.
Claire Keegan. But yeah.
All right.
Claire and the Sun.
I read recently the new Kristen Hannah title, The Women.
Oh, did you like that?
I did.
I hear it gets rave reviews.
It is getting rave reviews. I will have a hard time ever saying that I like any Kristen Hannah book better than The Nightingale.
I know.
It's like in my top five. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Uh-huh.
So unfairly, I compare everything else that she writes to that one. And I still don't know that that moved ahead for me, but it was really good. I knew, it turns out, very little about what was going on in Vietnam. How the field hospitals and things were set up. This one is about a nurse who goes and she re-ups a couple times, and then what it's like for her coming back. So that was really good. And I read, this was a funny one, Vera Wang's Unsolicited Advice for Murderers.
Mm.
That was a cute little whodunit. And as much as a murder book can be a cute little whodunit, but that was pretty funny. And then I listened to The Summer Wives by Beatrice Williams. So I'm kind of all over the place with content right now, but that's fine. So, okay. So we've talked about the drink. We've talked about what we're reading. We've given you a summary. Are we ready to do spoilers?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. 3, 2, 1, spoiler alert. First, let me ask you both. How did you feel after you read this book? Like once you got through it all and we got to the end, how did you feel?
Like, did I think they were successful?
Sure.
Yes and no. I don't think they moved very far. I mean, based on, so 2000, I think it ended late 90s, 2000,
I think, right? The last date reference we had was 2003.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously that's
20 years ago.
So, mm-hmm. You know, who's to say, but no, did I feel like they moved very far from where they started? Not really.
I felt bad about that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they put in a lot of work.
Yes.
I mean, here they are doing all these flights because they're still working as a flight attendant, right? But then in the background, they're either running for office to be in the union or all this background trying to get the word out and trying to recruit members to, you know, flight attendants to, you know, align with
join the cause.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that had to have been exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of got to the end and I kind of felt like what I got from the cover and what I got from the synopsis was no surprise. Like, I got to the end of the book. I'm like, yeah, a lot of work for little gain. Sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. I was hoping that I was going to feel like from where I started to where I read to, that I was going to feel more hopeful that they were like, it was going to be easier for them going forward. And it's just not. Mm-mm. And to your point, Kelly, I think, yeah, they didn't get very far because they were doing all this work, and so it was not for lack of trying. It's just,
right.
They just kept throwing obstacles up, and
right.
As fast as they could knock one, you know, the attendants could knock one down, they were faced with another one.
Yeah.
So, maddening, I think was the first word that came to mind for me when I was reading it. I was like, I can't believe anyone was, like, realistically subjected to these conditions. And nobody thought, you know, maybe we should check with them before we make these decisions. And, they're the ones who are going to have to execute these plans on the plane and whatever. And they were just, like, expected to go along with it. And it wasn't my favorite.
Yeah. No, and, you know, because, like I said, I'm fascinated by, you know, Pan Am was the elite, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, airline and stewardess, so you know, you'd always see them in their nice little blue suits with their little blue cap, and,
yeah,
you know, it always looks so glamorous, you know, they got to fly because it's that you bought into their advertising, mm-hmm. Right, not knowing that all of that was going on behind. Though I feel like we all knew that they were they were being put up as a sex symbol or whatever, mm-hmm. And you know, weren't taken seriously, but still.
And I think, to be fair, this book is a lot about the fights they fought to get better conditions for work. I don't think that it wasn't some glamour. I think they did get to see places they might not have otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't that everybody hated every second of being on the plane. A lot of people took a lot of pride in this work. Like, it wasn't all bad, but what was bad.
Yeah.
And then they were going up against these really powerful companies to try to get just a little bit better.
I think in that respect, that actually they did make a lot of gains. It was just, the duration of time and how hard they had to work to make those games seemed exhausting.
Yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, they got rid of the pregnancy and the weight, and there were so many things that they had to chip away at them so slowly over so many years that I was exhausted while reading it at what they had to put in. I mean, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, men are flight attendants. Like, a lot of these things don't exist now. But it took 50 years.
Yeah.
Right.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It is crazy.
And I remember thinking when I was done, like thanks, ladies, for all this work so that I'm younger than the people in this book. We're all younger than the people in this book. But, like, thank you, because I don't have to work in a place now where someone can put me on a scale.
Right.
Nobody can just walk up to me and make sure I'm wearing the appropriate undergarments.
Yeah, like, touch me to make sure that my girdle
is
that I have one, A, right. and B, that it's on properly.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm grateful for all the effort they put in so that I don't have to work in a workplace that's terrible, you know, in these really, like, demeaning ways. Yeah.
And it's nice that there's, like, case law. Was it the marriage one or the pregnancy one? And then the gender one, where, like, they still cite today.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, that I didn't know that those – I can't remember if it's pregnancy or marriage, but one of those two were one that they still cite as far as, like, maybe it's pregnancy. You can't fire someone or let them go. Like, they get the same amount of time off and then can return to the job mm-hmm. as long as they can – or whatever it is. So that was, like, oh, that was a stewardess thing? I had no idea.
Yeah. When we first started reading it and we're learning about Pat and her effort to go to stewardess camp.
Yes.
Basically what it was, right?
What did they call it?
What did they call it? The Charm Farm.
Charm Farm. Yeah. It had a maddening name.
It did. Yeah. The Charm Farm. And I was like, I'm a rule follower almost to a fault sometimes, and I don't know that I would have made it through Charm Farm.
Uh-uh.
And yes, I have the privilege of looking back on it and knowing that this is, I don't know that I would have been able to just, like, not only do everything they were asking, but Pat was going above and beyond to make sure that she was, like, the best at Charm Farm. And I don't know if I could have made it.
You know what I found fascinating? As women do. There was no camaraderie, so you would turn on your fellow.
Yeah.
To make yourself look better, right?
Right.
There was a lot of that.
There was. And it was interesting that when they started shifting towards union work, how obviously not 100%, but we focused on women that were supporting the union, but how some of that started to shift with those women.
Mm-hmm.
And they realized that they had to support each other. But you knew that there was this whole set of women that mm-hmm. were like, that's not my problem. I'm not over the weight limit. I am looking for a spouse. I don't want to do this forever. And the book didn't focus on them as we got into the 60s, but you know that existed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and even later, there was a whole contingent in I think it was in the Dallas region where they were like, we don't really care about your union effort. Like, we think you're being a little overdramatic about this. And that was into the 70s.
Right. And there was the segment that said, yeah, well, I only want to be here for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I do want to get married and have children, so I don't really care, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was just
there was not a lot of like future planning mm-mm. from a lot of folks for like in the name of the industry and what you were asked to do. So I was really impressed with as we got into it with their efforts to like take all of their people and create their own union when they discovered that the one that they were part of just wasn't doing it for them. They were part of a much bigger union that was not taking their requests and complaints seriously. And so they're just like, all right, we're going to spin off. And nobody thought they could do it. I laughed out loud, though, when we got to the part where they were like, okay, we did it, but now what do we do?
Well, and that was and I kept thinking, oh, this is going to be a disaster. This is going to be a disaster. You don't have any idea what you're doing. And then they did admit it, like, oh, we should have probably had, I can't remember what they said. Oh, we should have had election. I can't remember how they worded, but they listed off the things that they didn't have in place that they should have thought about while they were trying to get this passed.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a year or more to get it passed, right? But they didn't set up any, like, structure.
They were working so hard to just get the people on their side so they could vote to break away, that when they broke away, they were like, oh, shit.
Right. Yeah.
We need to, like...
We won. But did we?
Right. Although I will tell you, I was surprised because I didn't know. I didn't know which... So when I got to the end and it's still a union.
Yes.
Still, I was like, oh, well, they figured it out.
All right. Yeah, yeah. So that was good. And a lot of unions did not survive, like, their little independence. The little ones that were independent of the really big ones didn't make it. And they still are. I was also really proud of myself for not looking that stuff up while I was reading the book. I was like, no, I'm going to just see how it plays out in these pages. And so that was a nice surprise.
I think one of the things I found more maddening, even though we'll talk, I'm sure, about the weight and the costumes. I don't even want to call them uniforms, but we'll talk about that, I'm sure. But was the notion that you have paid into a thing, a union, and then that union is structured, even though it's union versus management, but it's structured exactly like the management with the same sorts of men running it. So even though one is supposed to be supporting you because you pay into it and the other one is supposed to be your adversary, they're essentially both your adversaries. Mm-hmm. So you have to fight your own union to represent you, and they don't. So, like, part of me is like, I didn't think it was gonna work. Mm-hmm. And Tommy was the woman who was trying to work her way up the actual union leadership. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I get it, but I don't blame all these other women for being like, we can't work within the system. They don't respect us. They are men whose fathers were auto workers who are all mechanics. Like, they have no concept or care about women's rights in the workplace. They'll take our money, but the priorities will always be at the bottom. I'm like, I don't know how you have worked within that. So that was, I found that as maddening as anything else, that the people who you're paying to support you put you at the bottom time and time again.
Maybe next year.
And then when you get mad, they're like, ugh.
Yeah, how dare you?
How dare you be mad?
Yeah.
You're going to break away and do what? Like, I don't know.
We'll probably get to that concern in the next round. Maybe.
Maybe.
If we have time.
Right. Like, she went from like, I don't want to meet with, wasn't Jimmy Hoffa?
Yes, it was.
I don't want to meet with him in like a decade later. Yeah, she was like, I'm going to use those tactics.
I feel like he's going to get it done.
I feel like I wish he wasn't gone.
Yeah.
He disappeared. I feel kind of bad now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was like way back in the beginning, the early days, right? She meets him and she says something. I mean, like, they were introduced and then she just totally.
Yeah. She was like, I'm not doing this.
I'm not using those tactics. Those, no. Like, basically gangster bullying tactics.
Right.
And then. Yeah, in you know, mid to late 70s, she's like, "Oh yeah, he's now missing,"
and I see why he had to do.
Yeah, you mentioned Tommy, and her efforts to climb the ladder within the TWU, right? That was the big union they were trying to break away.
Transport Workers Union.
Yeah, yeah. And what I was most impressed with of all the things that she did was her ability to turn that 180. When they won and split off, and she was like, okay.
And she didn't win.
This isn't what I wanted,
but
it's what we've got. So I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that it's successful. And then she, like, cleaned that office out.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, man, she probably was smarting a little bit from that loss, right? She spent all this time and energy trying to make this initial one better. Now everyone's spun out, and she was like, yeah, okay, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to do everything I can.
The minute she heard about it, like, she was in that office.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did she call her three friends and was like, y'all need to come here and bring your cars.
Yeah, and thank goodness they did, because nobody was going to give them that stuff back. So I was, of all the things she did, I think that quick turn, that U-turn with her was maybe the thing I respected her for the most.
Like,
it's not what I wanted, but it's what I've got, so... I'm going to make it work.
It's sort of back to that whole union thing. Like, the power is in the numbers. So even though the TWU had the more numbers than the spinoff was going to have, the spinoff wasn't going to work if everyone didn't get behind.
Right.
I can't remember, AFPA or I don't remember what it was called.
Yeah.
And she knew that, which was, super respectful that, like, if we're going to make this work, because it's what she said, like, it's the stewardesses, it's the flight attendants. It's not about,
yeah.
You had to swallow a lot of pride, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. I just want to touch base on the advertising.
Okay. Yeah, let's get into that.
Oh my gosh. Like, some of the, and you know, the actual advertisements that, like, you can find.
The slogans?
Yeah, the slogans and stuff. Oh my gosh. So blatantly sexual.
Uh-huh.
It was crazy to me. Crazy.
Listeners, Jen is showing us a picture on page, 70-something of the paperback?
Oh my God, I need glasses. Oh, I don't. Yeah, 32?
The page 32 of the paperback copy. And it is the introducing the Airstrip poster. That was awful.
Where they start with more clothing and end with less by the end of the panel.
Like, this is one of those times where you're hoping you're just on one of the 1 hour flights, right? Like, as the stewardess.
And then, you know, there was one picture. This wasn't an advertisement, but there was one picture because on one of the flights, was it Hawaiian Airlines or whatever? You were expected to kiss the gentleman on the cheek when they left the plane.
Was it on the cheek or were they directed to kiss them on the mouth?
Mm-mm.
It was the cheek?
It was okay, the cheek. Good. But then the men would turn their
yeah.
heads,
yeah.
knowing that then they would be stuck kissing them on the lips. And so I'm just thinking, what job would ever require you to kiss somebody? What job?
No. This was just like one example of all of the things they were asked to do. And the people in charge thought, we're just going to tell them to do it, and they're gonna, or they're out of here.
Well, right.
And many of them were, you know, they were reliant on these paychecks because they were, for the first time, like, trying to live their independent lives. And, it was, some of it was just flat out disgusting.
It really was. I mean,
Well, that the airlines, too, would do that thing, like, this is what I always remember from, like, the civil rights movement for African Americans, and earlier than that, where it's like, well, we ask the people and this is what they want. Yeah, but sometimes as a nation, you can just decide that what people want is wrong.
Yeah.
Because it's wrong. Right, so right. The customers you're getting feedback from all say they like fill mm-hmm. in the blank, but they can also just be wrong about that. Women mm-hmm. shouldn't have to show you their underpants and paper dress and paper outfits.
But who's the clientele?
Well, that's
right?
Exactly it.
Who is the majority of people flying?
Yeah.
Was men, businessmen, right?
Mm-hmm. But the notion that it's like, well, those are the people that buy the tickets that then pay for us to do this job. Therefore, we have to give them what they want is like that constant like corporate rationale for so many things.
Yeah.
Or sometimes countrywide rationale for things where it's like, yeah, but we can agree that that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. And like,
I don't really care if that's what your clientele wants.
Well, and in that same vein, when they're giving feedback, like if one person on a flight of 185 leaves a comment card that... she forgot to smile at me one time when she walked past me in the aisle. That gets them on probation.
Right.
Like, one out of 185. It was mind-blowing. The littlest infraction, and I'm calling it an infraction because that's what the airline called
right.
it. To me, that was someone that was just being human.
Right.
But, like, the tiniest little infraction of these rules was like, cause for dismissal. And it was... Yeah, I don't know. To me, it was mind-blowing that they could be asked to go because, you know, somebody thought, I know she's not having a good day and she didn't smile at me when I asked, so I'm going to write it down.
Well, right. And it comes back to the whole union thing of like, so are you being let go because of this one infraction mm-hmm. or are we looking for infractions for the problem people so
well,
we can let them go?
Well, there was a lot of that, right?
I mean, that's a thing, right? Like, this is a person who's making a lot of waves,
yeah.
so... We're checking every box for her. We're maybe more or less concerned about everyone else, although they sound like they're concerned about everybody. But it does make you wonder. Like,
well, they use that weight. Like, if they wanted to get rid of, like, you could just bend. You need to go weigh in right then and there,
yeah.
right?
Anybody could tell you to do it.
Yeah.
No. What a humiliating process.
Yeah.
There
was at the end of the book when they were like in the late 70s, they were like, also, maybe you can't make them weigh in during their period. I was like, they just figured that out in the 70s, like that you put on a couple pounds.
As someone who like personally, my weight fluctuates far, far in a short amount of time.
Oh, daily.
I'm like, not only would I not have made it through Charm Farm, I would have failed the majority of my scale tests.
Think about what they were giving them, though. To stay under the weight.
Oh, yeah, the medications that they were on.
The
ephedrine?
Yes.
Yes.
Which is now illegal, is it not? I mean, you can't...
Is it illegal, or do you just have to know that it's in something?
Maybe.
I don't know. But, yeah. I can remember as a kid in the 80s, all those commercials for, like, Dexatrim and,
yeah.
you know, things that they were mm-hmm. like, yeah, help suppress your Was it really just suppressing your appetite?
Oh, no.
I don't think so.
When you look at the weights they were expected to keep, again, back to what we
right.
talked about
yes.
a minute ago, I was like, yeah, there's no way.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. I would be hangry all the time. So I don't know what I would need to take to be pleasant.
No.
Because it would have to be something else.
Right? That's a valid point. Because nobody likes me when I've not had a snack. So, yeah. Yeah. And I can't remember which part of the book it was in, but I do remember reading something where they were talking about the chart that they were using. Maybe it was in the negotiations. They were talking about this chart and it came out that they were using ideal, and I'm putting that in air quotes, ideal body measurements for people, but it was from the 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now we're 50 years further on in evolution of the human body, and this is the number you're still targeting. I think that I would have been of the belief as a 19-year-old in the position to apply for this job, I would have fully believed it was going to be a great time, but
because I don't think they,
until I heard these things.
Well, right, because I don't think, you know, the advertisement to get somebody to apply for the job, I'm not sure they said anything about. I think they said you had to be so this tall, you know, whatever mm-hmm. height range, and they might have said weight range in there too in the advertisement, but I don't think that those women understood, oh, that means I had to maintain it. And then
right.
I had to weigh in every day, or that, you know, whatever else they had to do, or these clothes that I was going to have to wear, costumes, paper.
Yeah.
Paper.
Short.
Yeah.
Paper.
Paper. I don't understand how that works.
A paper uniform?
Yeah.
It doesn't.
I don't know how you even wear that.
No.
And how it doesn't rip.
Well, like, it did. I think they talked about
that
they
was
spent
like the point.
Whichever airline had that uniform talked about how they spent half of their time
taping
up their uniform. And yeah. I suppose if the only thing you think the flight attendant is doing is walking around and looking cute, maybe in your opinion, but like they're serving food, they're serving drinks, they're helping people out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've never worked in a restaurant, but like food and drinks are messy.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't use paper. We use, like, fabric to not have them be messy. I don't.
Yeah.
I just, I feel like paper, like, I have this picture of paper. So, like, it crinkles when you walk.
All I'm thinking about are those dumb things they give you in the doctor's office.
Yes. Yes.
Like, it's flimsy.
Yes.
It doesn't cover, it's like, do they come in sizes?
I don't know.
No,
yeah, I'm fascinated by that. And I would like
yeah.
to, I don't know that they had a picture of a paper uniform, did they?
And what happens when somebody spills their martini on you?
Right, because would it not just disintegrate?
You'd think so.
And then it would be see-through?
There were some of these decisions I thought, if somebody had asked like two questions in this meeting, we could have saved ourselves
two.
So much trouble.
But that presumes that they care what
there was anyone in the meeting to ask those questions.
Two, and that they care what they think.
Yeah.
Which they did not.
Yeah.
Right.
But
yeah, I'm gonna have to look up what those paper uniforms look like.
Yeah,
I don't get it. It's just, I can't even fathom.
Yeah, going back to the taglines, I mean, some of these were just
"Fly me." That was the one that bothered me the most.
Because it's terrible.
It is.
Yes,
and the one that followed it, which was something about watching their tails.
Oh,
but mm-hmm. "Fly me." I do think "Fly me" was mm-hmm. pretty terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I of course was nonstop reading for them the entire time I'm reading this book, but I was so flabbergasted that they even had to fight these fights, because I've never been faced with anything like this in my jobs,
right?
You know, and
thank God,
thank goodness for them,
right? Right.
So, yeah, I was glad to see that, you know, little by little they did get the things that they wanted. I thought, of all the things that the corporations were pushing back on, the single room issue was one that was like
stupid. Like why?
Was it just a power struggle? Is that all that came down to?
Maybe. And so the single room was that stewards, so male, at this point, men could be hired,
mm-hmm.
flight attendants.
Mm-hmm.
They could get a single room. And the logic behind that I thought was hilarious. Well, pilots, of course, got their own rooms because they're
course.
Pilots. Mm-hmm. But the reason that male flight attendants or male stewards got their own room was because it was understood that there were a lot of gay pilots. And so if you paired up two stewards to share a room and they were both men, well, you know, they're they're going to be doing homosexual things. But hilarious that that wasn't thought of as a woman, as we learned that so many of the women flight attendants were gay.
Right.
But they apparently, again, it's okay if women, well, it's not okay if they're gay, but, you know, who knows what they might be. That might be kind of sexy. I don't know what the logic was there. But yeah, so the idea that they could save money by putting two people in one room as opposed to two people in two rooms. Like, how much money were they actually saving? I don't know.
And like the and the complaints that they were bringing forth about having to share and what it meant for them, you know, I, like, my flight gets in really early. Someone else is really late coming behind me. I have to stay up to let them in. Like, a lot of it for, I was just like, oh yeah, there was a lack of technology. They had actual keys. You know, it was not, it wasn't like now where you can like wave your phone in front of a door at a hotel and like somebody lets you in. People were sleeping in bathtubs because they had noisy sleeper. I mean, it was... It's like, this just, like, I don't know, if you hear three or four of those things, it would make sense to me that there's just be, like, a thing that's easy to say yes to.
And they really fought.
They really fought hard against this one, like, seemingly simple request just to make the, if they had granted this a long time ago, it's possible, I mean, this is pure speculation, but, like, if this had been a thing that was seeded long before they tried to do the spinoff, it might have been a thing that meant that they didn't feel like they had to do that even.
Yeah.
You know, there were a lot of issues, and it's eventually they probably would have done that anyway. But it was just like, that was like the last straw for so many of them. Like, it's this easy thing. You're already doing it for half the people who work for the airline.
More than half, probably.
Why do we not get this one give, you know?
Well, and so, you know, they're after it, you know. So the steward of flight attendants turned down or... didn't ratify, whatever you want to call it, turned down the proposal twice, you know.
Yes.
Because they wanted to give them more money, but they didn't include in the single room, and it got turned down twice. And so when they finally did it, they took out the increase, right? There was no increase in pay, but you got a single room. So then the companies are like, but we didn't raise increase pay at all, just the single room. And, you know, it's sorry for you, you know, or like you took the bad deal or something. And they're like, well, no, not really.
We didn't.
Well, that's that whole thing about listening to, as the union, listening to what your constituents want.
Uh-huh. Right.
And I'm not suggesting that, again, the men in the union who are the mechanics weren't, again, this is just that funny thing when you've got different kinds of jobs within one union that, like, yes, you guys are coming home and maybe you have spouses that are home and they're raising your kids. And for you, it's money, period, amen. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. But you don't have to deal with any of the other things that other people who are in your same union. And if the whole idea with unions is solidarity and that's how you get what you want, everybody's concerns have to be brought to the table. So the notion that, like, the attitude, but this is sexism, right?
Right.
You're just these little women that are pretty and you just do this job for 18 months. So why should it matter if for 18 months you have to share a room with someone? Why? And the notion that women are like, we want to be considered professionals.
Yeah.
Is it so much to ask that you're a professional? I'm a professional. But it's that where there's no overlap between the men of that era not looking at that job as a professional job. It's different than a mechanic.
Right.
It's different than a pilot. But it's still a profession. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they had to work so hard to be and no surprise, they had to work so hard because all of the advertising did not portray them as professional.
Right.
So it was like they were fighting.
I do like that.
Okay.
Yes. So it was Society for Women's Rights.
It wasn't the union. It was the association that they made.
SW. Okay. I do like that they made a video and tried to negate the sexism that was going on in the, you know, advertising world. And they talked about how they have to have this kind of training. They have to have this kind of training. They are professionals. They're in charge of getting you out in an emergency.
Yeah.
So they're not just sex symbols, right?
And then, well, the interesting part there is they wanted you to be a sex symbol until there was an emergency. And then they wanted them to be everyone's mom.
Right. Right. Like,
which, ew.
Right. Right. They wanted you to be pretty and sexy and, like, make everyone happy to be there until there was a problem.
Well, and then the one
example...
And now
you need to take care of everybody.
...that they gave, like, why this is, like... this is not a safe type of environment. It was like some flight attendant was escorting emergency off the plate, and some guy picked her right up and just took him with him off the plane and said, you shouldn't be here.
It's just too dangerous.
and took her right off the plane. And she's in charge of getting everybody off the plane, right?
Right.
So
thanks for being a hero. Just what she needed. Yeah.
But then I remember, like, at the end, again, it was like late 90s, early 2000s is when they actually got safety certified.
Yeah, not till the 90s.
Yes. No, it was 2003.
Oh,
it was after, that's what I think. After
9/11.
They're like, can we be certified? Yeah. Like, safety certified?
Yep. And it was still 2 years later. It still took 2 years of negotiating for them to be able to get that safety certification. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was, and that date stuck with me because I was like, wow, that's, in the grand scheme of this, it is not that long ago that they finally got that, you know, that acknowledgement or that certification. But
I will say, I thought it was interesting that they were dealing with all this, and yet we were still talking about, like, first wave feminism, and we were talking about, like, they had to go to the Supreme Court at some point, maybe in the 70s. I don't know when, but, oh my God, not Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Sandra Day O'Connor, who was the first female oh my God, I feel stupid right now. But it was a female justice. And I was like, so we're acknowledging that women can be intelligent enough to be on the Supreme Court. And a lot of the lawyers that were fighting these on both sides were women. Yet we don't think, like, this job and these things that they need to do. Like, we've already been through, like, plane hijacking. Like, it kind of blew my mind that there were clearly parts of the world, the United States, where there was an acknowledgement of women's ability to excel in their field.
So,
and that this was just like, yeah, but you're too pretty. This isn't one of those things.
Yeah.
So there, you know, that's interesting because I'm trying to think now. So this is like the U.S., right? We're not talking about flight attendants in other countries, right?
Well, they did talk about how some other international airlines tried to spin their own unions off.
Oh, okay.
And then a lot of them did not survive long enough to have been effective.
And some of them, I think, were slightly more progressive about some of the things that, but
as most countries are.
But, and I don't, I don't, I didn't do any research on what it looked like internationally.
Yeah, I didn't, but it was just interesting.
This was focused primarily on, this book was focused primarily on American airlines.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Not airlines in America, but the actual company, American Airlines.
Yeah, but there was a lot of, like, there's a lot of airlines that I didn't even know existed, like names I didn't recognize, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's because mergers and, you know, bought up the smaller ones. But
okay, can I talk about one thing I didn't enjoy at all about this book?
Yeah.
I felt like for the number of people that were introduced, there was not nearly enough. I'm not an author, so I don't know what you do to, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, you have characters you've introduced to differentiate them. I remember two people in this book, Pat Gibbs and Tommy with an IE, whose last name I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. So, like,
you're
felt
not wrong.
There was like a whole, they may have been the most important two, but there was like a Dusty, and I don't remember who
else.
I feel
like Dusty was pretty important, though.
Right, but I don't like.
But I don't remember why.
Somebody was from Texas, somebody was from somewhere else, and I kind of feel like when you're writing, even in nonfiction, there's got to be some sort of hook or some way you've described or introduced your real people to make them memorable and stand out. So as you follow them through many decades of whatever you're dealing with, you have a hook. Right. And I feel like even though there may have only been a couple that were really important, there were enough people introduced that I was like, who? Huh?
Yeah.
And then it becomes slightly boring because you're reading about a Dusty or you're reading about Charlie some, and I'm like, is Charlie the management? Is Charlie TWU? What? I don't remember. So that I struggled with, even though it was only about 250 pages, I didn't love the, I felt like, oh, this is a book about how women are treated like crap in the workplace. And by the end, I was like, women are treated like crap in the workplace. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't feel
surprise.
Like there was a whole lot of revelation. I was maddened by some things that I will remember, but I didn't feel like some nonfiction. I feel like there's a lot of like things you read about the civil rights movement when you're, of course, maddened. You know you're going to be maddened, but you learn things about individuals and you come away with it from something in it. I don't really feel that with this one so much.
Yeah, it tried to cover a lot of time and a lot of ground in not enough pages. A thing that came up in another discussion I had about this book was also that it touched on it, but it did not get very far or far enough into the experiences of women of color who were having these issues, but also dealing with blatant racism in their everyday work. And they talked a little bit about how as the fight got like ramped up a little bit, that they were less likely to let those comments go by. But in the beginning, it was like extra bad. And we didn't get very much reference to that either. But again, this book probably could have been 500 pages in the same vein that Killers of the Flower Moon was like that, right? There were so many single mentions of people that needed to be mentioned, but they needed 400 pages of that book to get them all in there.
Sure.
And
and
even that was maybe not, it didn't cover enough either. But I think that it the scope of it was admirable, but maybe...
Or as well, a librarian I know says, I don't agree with this, but says, in her opinion, most nonfiction could be a long essay.
Oh,
I don't agree with that. Or the argument could be make this. Had this been an Atlantic piece that talked about only two people, and had it hammer home some of the big points. Instead of dragging it out over 250 pages where you're like, yeah, of course it's stupid to fire women when they're pregnant. And here's why.
Yeah.
But I feel like we read about that a lot. Again, to use your Killers of the Flower Moon reference. Of course, it's ridiculous to say that people who are native aren't competent and have to have guardians. Like, you don't need anyone to explain why that's crazy. But the way that author presented it, the incredulity you had when you're reading it. And I don't feel like I read anything in here that I was like, that's crazy. But also I was like, and expected.
Okay.
Right. You know?
Yeah.
And there was a lot of like union talk and union people, which I find fascinating. But also I felt like it started to just wash over me and become noise.
Because they were fighting so many battles.
Right.
It was on all fronts. Yeah.
When they took those boxes out of when the one union passed or whatever, and they started taking boxes out of those offices. It was so many boxes. I mean,
the grievances they were taking.
Yeah. After grievance, everything was a grievance.
And I was just imagining them in that office, like, taking their arms and just sweeping everything off desks and countertops into these file boxes and just, like, you know, paper flying everywhere. And, nothing was in order. And there were so many to get through.
I mean, and that's all they did was do grievances, you know? And did they work? Sometimes. I suppose they got some kind of people got their job back because they were fired or whatever, you know?
They might have gotten their job back, but in the time that they had off, they gained 30 pounds. And then they couldn't do the job anymore anyway.
And they were fired.
They weren't allowed.
And then they were fired, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then your union isn't really fighting for you because you're a woman and your job is easy and we'd rather give mechanics a pay raise. So, you know, okay, we'll get to you maybe. Or maybe
or the amount of money they lost because, you know, they didn't always get that money.
They didn't get back pay.
Right.
Yeah, they didn't get back pay.
And still now, I was having a discussion about this book earlier with someone who's... relative is a flight attendant. They're still not getting paid for the time the plane is on the ground.
No, they're not. They're only when they're there.
They don't. Yeah. When they're like boarding everyone onto the plane. Mm-hmm. I wish you guys could have seen the look that Jen just shot. When we're getting on the plane and they're like getting everyone settled, like a lot of that time is not paid. There's a flight minimum that they have to make. But if you are sitting at that gate with the door open for an extra hour because there was a problem with the plane or whatever. They're not getting paid for all of that. That's wild
crazy.
To me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the next or the forefront right now for them in their fight is to get paid for the time that they're
if you're scheduled
working.
To be there at a certain time, which I know they are.
Yeah.
Then you're
that's
paid.
When you that should be when your shift starts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people are like, well, but they get the rooms covered. Okay.
I get books for free.
Right.
So
if someone sends me to a place for my job, my room is covered.
Right.
Like I don't understand.
You know, and they're doing things they're not supposed to. Like a flight attendant's not supposed to lift your suitcase into the bin. Mm-hmm. They do it all the time. At their own personal risk, because if they throw their back out lifting your bag up and they weren't supposed to be doing that, no one's going to help them. You know, it's.
I wonder, do the pilots get paid?
I don't know. That's a good question.
So we're in 2024. Are there still this inequity?
I have my suspicions.
Right?
But when the pilots, and so when the pilots get there, because they have to do that whole like pre-flight check, right? They got to look over the plane, get it ready to take off, make sure everything's functioning.
Do we really not want to be paying somebody who's supposed to do a pre-flight check?
I absolutely do. To that same point, I want to make sure the mechanics are making the right amount of money, right?
Like, right, right.
I don't think the flight attendants ever said or ever thought, like, we don't want you to not get what you want too.
Right.
There's a place here for all of us.
Right.
We can all get what we want. There's no reason we can't all present these things. Like, they need us.
Right.
So, but yeah, no, I do want my pilot to be paid to do a thorough check of that plane before we take off.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I do want the mechanics underneath to make sure that they have checked all of the, you know, all the seams and the flaps and the wheel, like all of it. Yes. And I do want the flight attendants to get paid for stashing, you know, coats and lifting bags and making and scanning people as they're coming on to see, you know, who's who's where and, you know, are we going to have a problem? Is someone already obviously inebriated? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a big job. And if there is a problem in the air, I want to, you know, I'm glad to know that they're safety certified.
Can you imagine,
and they know what to do if there is an emergency.
Flying and just having it just be the pilots and the piloting and y'all in the back. No. Can you even imagine, like,
no,
the food's there.
Right.
There's snacks. Like, let's just pretend there's no alcohol. Just pretend there's no alcohol. Like, it's just, here's all of us in the back of the plane. It's just a wild, wild west back here. Just figure it out. But it's about an hour and 40 minutes.
The first thing everyone would do is bring on their own booze. Right.
Right.
So there's no limit on how much you can have.
Right. It'd be a hot mess.
That is, okay, going back to them, like, being on board. Yes, now I'm waving my finger around. Going back to them being on board, and maybe they're only on the plane for an hour and a half, 2 hours on these short little business flights or whatever. You know that they were throwing back 3 or 4 martinis or, you know, that no one was capping how much liquor anyone could have on those flights. It's really amazing to me that we didn't read more in this book about more problems on board.
No, because they really didn't.
Like, behavioral issues.
Yeah, they never talked about
what they did was bad enough. But, like,
that's why I say I think that part of me would have enjoyed less about, like, you could have told me some of the general, like, struggles with their union and then the union struggles with the management and a more, maybe a couple of individual, like, deep dives. But, like, were women assaulted on the plane?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would have been not surprising, but that would have been more shocking or more upsetting to me, and that would have stuck with me more than, like, they had to wear paper dresses and they had to constantly tape them up. Yes, yeah. I mean, that was upsetting, but, like, hearing about a woman, although there was one woman who ended up committing suicide because of, was it her weight? Yes, it was somebody's friend. Am I correct?
Yeah. I vaguely remember that, but I don't remember.
Yeah. It was a flight attendant. I don't know if it was Pat or Tommy now, but somebody's
friend
who was, I don't know, she was dismissed because of fill in the blank reason, and she struggled and then ended up killing herself.
Yeah.
And I mean, so, like, things like that would have been, I think, would have maybe stuck with me more than the ins and outs of all of every little court case
all
or all the, you know.
Yeah, the direct consequences of management's requirements. Right?
Yeah. And then at the very end, when they talk about was it Reagan when the regulations were rolled back, like, it kind of treated that, I know that wasn't the bulk of the book, but I remember thinking it kind of swept it, like, regulations were rolled back and then the airlines didn't have to meet regulations, and so then it became a free-for-all, and I was like, well, what does that mean?
Yeah, I didn't understand deregulation.
Yeah, the general effect of deregulating anything, I can imagine. But what did it mean for them, and why did that mean things were rolled back? Not just for and it kept talking. It talked about all the airlines that went bankrupt. And again, I guess part of me was like, well, I guess I can figure that out. But it would have been nice if there was a little bit of time spent on this is why United or I might be American. Well, this is why they went bankrupt, and this is how it affected not just the stewardesses but everybody. And why? What was the deregulation that caused these mass layoffs?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't able to make that connection based on book content. I would have had to Google that.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe it was easy to know, so that was another thing that I was like, I don't know where we're at now. To the beginning where, like, did they make any progress? Like, I don't feel like now with deregulation that happened, I think it was in the 90s or maybe it was the 80s. I don't feel like I have an understanding where the stewardesses or any of the employees stand now in their jobs and what gains they made and are those
right?
Not roll back. We know we fly. We know right. flight attendants are not wearing paper, and we. But I don't know. Are there weight required? I mean, like I don't. I guess I don't understand where they are now.
They talked about that a little bit. I think in the epilogue where it said they no longer put you on a weight restriction, but they have a. It's a proficiency test, and you have to be able to move about the cabin quickly. Exactly. So, i.e., you can't be, like, too big to move up and down the aisles without, like, getting caught up or whatever. So there's, it's some of it is just, like, rephrasing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is not better. But I guess better than having to put you on a scale in the middle of a busy charm farm to have everybody see what number you're at.
You know, I feel like in the past few years I've flown quite a bit. And what I'm noticing is there are a lot of younger flight attendants, mm-hmm. which is interesting to me because why? I mean, why do they decide to go?
Still being sold a little bit as a way, like, to see the world, you know? And again, it probably is.
Sure.
It probably is a way that you're going to get to go to some places where you might not have otherwise. Right.
And do it while you're young.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. College is really expensive.
Yeah.
So if you can go, make your way through this course in a much shorter amount of time and you're not going into crippling debt, you know, to come out and get a job right away, why not? Right? But it certainly is better for them now than it was in the beginning of this book. But
right.
Yeah, they're still fighting some fights.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've noticed that they're younger. There's a lot of young ones.
And
yeah.
They still seem to be, I don't fly as often as you guys, but they still, I'm thinking, I think the stewardesses are still pretty made up. Like, I haven't flown since, makeup-wise, like, mm-hmm. I haven't flown since I started this, but anytime I've been on a plane, I'm always, because I've sort of absorbed the cultural expectation that stewardesses look a certain way. Mm-hmm. And so you notice, you know, and it's like, yeah, hair still, but I mean, not everyone doesn't have their jaunty little cap on covering their bangs or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And yes, the uniforms are much more professional and they're not a sex symbol, but I still feel like a lot of, at least women are still, you know, very well made up, hair very pulled back, very like, it's businesslike, but very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even much older, which is actually kind of a relief. I have certainly seen a lot of women. Like I was like, oh, that's surprising, because I've definitely seen women that look older than me who are clearly been doing this a long time. But I have never seen a slovenly, messy looking steward or stewardess in my life. So,
I mean, I feel there's a certain look that, you know, you're expected to have.
Well, I mean, I think in most industries, they're asking you to put forth some image, not necessarily a suit and tie every day, or, you know, it doesn't just have to be dresses. But I think most places where you're working, if you're out, if you're in that moment, the face of that company, there is an expectation,
an image
of a tidy presentation.
Right.
Sure, but we've all been places where people have to wear a uniform and the uniform looks tight or it doesn't.
Yeah.
I think of like fast food. Mm-hmm. You know, those are young people who are working who aren't paid very well. Sure, they have a uniform. Meh. Right?
And right.
Yeah.
Does my pilot on an airplane actually need to be in a uniform to fly the plane well? I'd rather be comfortable. But if you saw a pilot walk in and like sweats and like his like Hoosiers hoodie, like, cool, peace out, we're about to fly, I'd be like, what the hell's happening?
Well, so that's the image, right? So are they trying to have this image that instills confidence because in
an emergency, is someone going to respond with a little more urgency to someone who is standing in front of you who looks like they're in charge?
Yeah.
I don't know. And what does that even mean?
Right.
You know, who?
Right.
They make all those people in the exit row make sure they know how to get that door off. So I don't care what they're wearing as long as they can pull that lever.
Right. But, you know, they didn't address how the depending on your airline, or maybe it's just your crew, how sometimes the in-flight safety thing is hilarious.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's very professional.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know if that's an airline thing, if they decide like, hey, we're updating this so you can all be funny, or if it's just like, this is what we have to express, your crew on your plane can handle it however. But I've certainly been on planes when they're like,
yeah.
We're all listening now.
Right.
I actually do pay attention more when it's not the boring scripted one. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'm glad we read it. I'm glad that
it was interesting.
That I have a better understanding of what it was like for people in the.
I feel like I do have to go to look some things up though.
Yeah.
To get a better picture.
Agreed.
Yeah, I do want to see a paper.
It needs a
uniform.
Sequel.
I don't know if I'd read a sequel. To be honest,
no, I don't know what else you could write.
But there's 21 years since the last mention in here.
That's kind of what I gotta go look at. Like, where are we at right now?
Yeah. So.
And why don't they get maybe paid that is from the time they have to get there? I want to know that.
Yeah. And I think that maybe airline by airline, that's like it's slightly changing the minimums. The very like surface research that I did on it was indicated that people were getting like a certain amount guaranteed for whatever flight they were on, but it still doesn't feel like it's the right thing if they're doing part of their actual job while the plane's sitting there. But
mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll do a little research and find out.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
So that wraps up the Great Stewardess Rebellion. Jen, thanks for being here mm-hmm. with us.
Thanks for having me. It was
fun.
And
thanks for bringing the treats and for finding the drink recipe. And we have not chosen an April title yet.
We have not.
So you'll just come back and listen for us in April, and we'll surprise you with what that's going to be. It's probably going to be April, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We'll shoot for April. We'll shoot for it.
Look for us sometime in the near future.
Right.
Yes. And in the meantime, we hope you're enjoying whatever you're reading and drinking. And cheers, friends.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.